Today, we're excited to welcome back Graham Moore to Eyes Wide Open as we delve into the riveting questions surrounding sovereignty. Who possesses it? Who wields it? And does Parliament genuinely reign supreme? We'll explore the concept of a republic as a potential remedy for the turmoil we're in and examine how the English Constitution is crafted to empower the people, not the tyrants. Furthermore, we'll discuss the English Constitution Party's bold mission to restore our birthrights as Englishmen and overthrow the parasitic, hostile elite. I'm your host, Lawrence Eastman, and this is Eyes Wide Open. Graham Moore, welcome back to Eyes Wide Open. Appreciate you coming back on. It's been a while since we've last chatted, and it's great to have you back.
No problem at all. I'm really pleased to be back.
Cool. I know that you've made loads of progress with the English Constitution Party since the last time we spoke, and we can talk about that in a short while. But at the moment, I'm really interested in the idea of sovereignty, in personal sovereignty, whether we transfer our sovereignty to the Crown, whether the Crown is still sovereign or still, you know, the prime sovereign, or as we're told, is that Parliament is sovereign. And I know that you've been writing about that and posting about that recently. So I thought it'd be, you know, the perfect person to pick up that conversation with, and let's delve into this idea of sovereignty and what it really means as an Englishman, and the history and where we're heading.
Yeah, no problem. So I think it's easier to say to people, it's better to speak about what 100% is incorrect, right? And that is Parliament calling itself sovereign. That is incorrect. What they're actually doing by saying that is, you can call it what you like, subversion of the Constitution, usurping the Constitution. In some effects, you could call it treason. You can call it contempt of sovereign, which is, by the way, still on the books of the English laws. Halsbury's Laws of England have still got the contempt of statute and contempt of sovereign, right? So what you've got to think about is that the people in Parliament are not there they are there to represent you via your suffrage rights, right? So you've got, everyone should understand that they've got what's known as universal suffrage. So once you understand universal suffrage, and you can go back to Ashby versus White 1703, and it actually describes to you what it means. And the meaning of it, quite simply, is this, that you have the right to vote and you have the right to stand in an election. It's called passive and active suffrage. The two combined is universal suffrage, right? We've had that right for years. Queen Anne actually pre-wrote Parliament because she was disgusted that Parliament would be debating an Englishman's right to vote. It's a really famous case, and it is a very important constitutional case. The reason why it's important, because it actually spells out a simple fact that if anyone was to interfere with your vote in any way, whether it be fraudulent, whether it be through the election system, etc., etc., why it's so important that they can't is, one, because it's a right, and secondly, which is really important, the reason why you vote is because you are being given your consent to be governed by voting, right? Now, some people say, Marxists in general, say, don't vote. Everyone don't vote. What you're actually doing is abrogating your right to vote and handing it to nefarious people, basically. You're saying to them, you go and do as you like, because them people voting are the ones. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but there was a saying, and I don't know if I can remember it correctly, but it was basically, if you haven't got a plan for your life, and you haven't got a plan, then you're part of someone else's plan, and their plan doesn't include your best interests, right? That was paraphrasing an old saying. That's true of if you don't vote. You're then part of someone else's plan, and you may stand there and say, I don't consent to be governed because I haven't voted. And they'll say to you, you've abrogated your right to vote. We haven't taken it from you. You've abrogated that right. So what? So let's get back to Parliament. If you think about suffrage and you think about universal suffrage, the active and passive side of this, so active suffrage is where you stand for election. Passive is where you're a voter, right, for example. So you can do either one of them things. Neither one of them things the state can revoke from you. It's an inalienable right, a God-given right, if you like. The point being, in Parliament, they are restricted by the Constitution. So this is where them saying they are sovereign, and I'll give you an example of something that is often said, which is wrong, right? They often say, if we was to make a law tomorrow, where all blue-eyed blonde babies should be put to death, then that is legal, right? What we say, and previous chief justices have said, is that is wrong, because the common law will control it, and the Constitution will control it.
So the statute, right? Can't override the common law?
You can't override the common law. The common law is always there to override statutes. Mm-hmm. So if you go and have a look, and again, on my screen in front of me, I've got various constitutional statutes. There is a theme that runs through the constitutional statutes, and that is the word forever, in all time to come, in this kingdom, for all time to come, various words and phrases that they are very clear. So the English Bill of Rights says forever three times, and it says in this kingdom for all time to come once, right? That means that statute, that bill, which also refers to the Declaration of Rights, which was a contract, cannot be erased. Within that document, it tells you that any statute in Parliament, any issue to do with our rights and liberties can be adjudged, right? So in other words, what I'm saying is if Parliament makes a law and it goes against our liberties and freedoms, the judiciary have the right to strike down that law.
Is that through judicial review?
It is technically, but there is some confusion, deliberately by the British, I may add, about judicial review and something called administrative law, mm-hmm. and the law of tort, right? So the law of tort is English, and you should be approaching the courts, not through the administrative court, but through the law of tort. And the reason for that is because where there is a right, there is a remedy, right? And that's the law at all.
That's good. So just repeat that again. So that where there is a right, there is a remedy. So whenever any of our rights have been established in the common law or constitutional law, that there is always a remedy whenever that right has been wronged?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right, so just this is a different type of analogy, but it's the same as if someone libels you, mm-hmm. in tort, that causes you a damage, right? And you have the right to take that person to court and claim damages against them. Mm-hmm. And if it's proven, the judge will award damages, mm-hmm. right? So where there is a right, there is a remedy. Mm-hmm. Right? So the principle of our constitution is it sets out a series of rights and common law rights. So some of the common law rights are not written down, but they have been with us, you know, for centuries or 1,000 years or sometimes longer, right?
So by custom and tradition, they are established as a right.
Right. So common law comes from custom, customary law, right? And that stems from the Anglo-Saxons, and it goes back even further to even some of the Dane law, some of the Celtic law or Celtic law, and all of these things were local, so therefore they was it was a customary law. And there's something in law called time immemorial. And that is a very important phrase in the common law and the justice system, because if you've got a right and you have had that right time immemorial, have you ever heard of the phrase in law similar, not the same, but very similar, grandfather rights?
No.
Right. So just for an example, HGV drivers. If you took your HGV test a long time ago, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, all right, they couldn't make you do X, Y, Z under new legislation, because what they would say is you have grandfather rights.
You've already done it under the old law.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So it's called grandfather rights. That's a very similar thing to time immemorial. Now, getting back to this situation with Parliament, why is it that they are not sovereign? And the answer is because the Constitution limits what they are allowed to do in law, right? So if they affect any of your rights, if you go through the Bill of Rights, if you go through the Acts of Settlement, if you go through even the Acts of Union, because the Acts of Union was an English law and a Scottish law, and that created the British Parliament. That British Parliament was told numerous times within the Acts of Union that these laws are forever, and the previous parliaments and the liberties that they enjoyed before, they will continue to enjoy forever. And it says
so that's like an example of grandfather rights, is that everything that existed before can't be superseded by this new British Union.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. So the problem we've got is that the parliamentarians we've got now have never ever read the English Bill of Rights, have never read the Acts of Settlement, many of them. Many judges, because they removed constitutional law in the early 1970s from the bar exams and from solicitors' exams. So many of them don't even know what a constitutional law is. In fact, I had a four-hour conversation with a barrister who is a highly skilled, very intelligent. He's on our side, right? He's a British trained barrister. 4 hour conversation on law and the common law. And he said to me, "You are more learned than I am on the common law and our constitution." And he is a top human rights lawyer in this country, right? So what I'm trying to say to you is, if you're not taught about something, then you don't know it exists. And that's what the British have tried to do. They've tried to remove it.
Eradicate our history.
Right. So what they're doing in schools, this is a very Marxist thing, that they are erasing not only the culture, but the education of our legal system, right? Our legal system and our constitution is the most dangerous thing to Marxists and communists, right? The irony of this is that most people who consider themselves to be on the left or right wing, they see it as, let's just say, Tories against Labour, right? That's a division that's been caused by these very people that are trying to erase the constitution. Really and truthfully, they've all come together. And it's really statists. So what I mean by that is totalitarian societies and government. In other words, they have full control over you, right? That's what really left-wing means. China, communism, North Korea, communism, Nazis, was, believe it or not, they was on the left. They wasn't on the right because they wanted complete control of society.
Well, they were socialists, right? Didn't they?
Exactly. And then if you look at the right, what the right means is we want the least amount of state, but we still want the rule of law, mm-hmm. right? And you get as many rights as you can. This gets back to your question. Some of these questions are not as simple to answer because you have to try and... Frame it in the right way. So this is where there's a difference between the common law and how our laws in England are framed and structured, and administrative law, Napoleonic law, Roman law, whatever you want to describe it as. So what they do is they write down reams and reams and reams and reams in a single law of what you're allowed to do. And anything that isn't written down as you're allowed to do in law is unlawful. So an administrator judge would just read down the list and say, well, it's not on here, so it's illegal, right?
It's illegal or legal.
It's illegal. If it's not written down, it's illegal. You're not allowed, you can't be doing it because we're telling you what you can do, right? Whereas English law is the opposite.
Of course.
We only tell you what you can't do, what is absolutely prohibited, right?
So, it has to be that way, doesn't it? Because how can you be free if you know, they're telling you what you can't do, or sorry, what you can do?
It's the antithesis of full control. Their system is full control. Ours is to release you to be as free as possible. And it's only society coming together to make these certain rules up. And it will be, that's why when you look at some of our laws from the past, there are only two or three lines.
Mm.
You look at the due process law, right? I think it's two lines. That's it. And people go, well, that can't be a law. And so, yeah, well, it is a law. It's saying
that's where you get maxims like ignorance of the law is no excuse, because originally the law was really super simple, wasn't it? So it wasn't pages and pages and pages and pages of legislation. How the hell are you meant to know what that is? So it's only through the obfuscation and the complication through ongoing legislation that it becomes impossible to know what the laws are, so-called laws.
And it's a downward spiral.
Yeah.
So getting back to the original question about Parliament and judicial review. So a judicial review, in effect, was brought in as part of an administrative system. So what the judges look at on a judicial review is not necessarily the law and whether it is what we call ultra vires, it meaning unlawful. It's outside the bounds of what can be done or can't be done. They more look at whether the process was followed or things like that. So whereas the law of tort is directly... and it's a different legal system, it's a different set of laws, and it looks at if you've had a right removed from you or harm has been caused to you by someone. So let's say the police acting under the authority of the Crown or warrant of the Crown or whatever you want to call it as a constable, illegally arrests you, maliciously prosecutes you, assaults you at the same time, is there a remedy? And where would you go for that remedy? Well, you don't go to judicial review. You go through the tort law.
County court.
Right? You go through the county court or the high court, depending on what you believe now, what the payout's going to be, right? And again, the British tried to remove, when in fact they succeeded, although we'll bring them all back, jury trials from those instances in tort law. So in 1933, I believe it was, they removed lots and lots of your right to have a jury trial for these torts that have been committed against you. But two or three of the things that they left in, one of them was if there was any issues with the police. So if the police had created an issue against your rights, you had the right to a jury trial. Most people don't know that. They settle out of court. Well, you want a jury to tell you how much that's worth because they're members of the public, right? So getting back to that, that's why you've got two separate systems. You've got You've got the administrative law, and what they're trying to do is push upon the English people an administrative state status, complete control of your life, whereas the opposite is true of the English law and the English, most importantly, the English Parliament. The way the English Parliament worked was that parliamentarians would never make a law, the bill drafter would never make a law that interfered with your rights in a Bill of Rights, within your rights of the Act of Settlement, within your rights of habeas corpus, within your rights of XYZ. All of your rights, and don't forget, most of these are written, not unwritten, they're written. It's not codified in the same way as the American Constitution, but the American Constitution actually comes from England. They codified it because it's a new country, 240 odd years old. That's why they did that. So sovereignty doesn't lie with Parliament. Sovereignty lies with the Constitution.
But that's what we're told, aren't we? We're told that sovereignty is now vested in Parliament, no longer in the Crown, and prerogative rights are within the office of Prime Minister and the Prime Minister's powers. Nobody really knows, or nobody can really define the limits of a Prime Minister's powers. Actually, people talk about there being unlimited powers within the Prime Minister's office due to the prerogative power and the fact that so-called sovereignty is vested in Parliament.
The answer is, that's a lie. It's a con. They have relied. One of the reasons why they don't like us, meaning the English Constitution Party, is because. So, first of all, just like yourself, I have been involved in a number of legal cases. I've won every one of them bar one, right? And that was because the judge was out and out crooked. I mean, proper crooked, right? Even winning an injunction in the European Court of Human Rights against the British government, right? So when these others come along and start talking about various elements, and they are never the type of people that actually sit in a court next to someone advising them and win a case. What they do is they get on these video shows and they talk about the law. And I've even seen barristers do it, by the way, right? And they talk absolute rubbish. And then you're trying to say, and then someone will say to me, but the barrister said this. And I say, yeah, well, he's trained by the British. You know, his whole living relies on the facts. If you was to say to that barrister, I want you to tell the jury this, the barristers say, I can't do that. Why can't you? Because the judge is going to report me to the bar, and I'll have my license to practice as a barrister taken away. So there's control of the barrister. There's control of solicitors. What we're saying is the English law system never used to have that control. The Court of Common Pleas, every Englishman was a common lawyer. That was the saying, right? Because the English law was so simple, your rights was understood and your right to remedy was understood. And you'd get a very intelligent common law judge listening to both sides and made a decision, or a jury would make that decision, right? So, again, they've lied to us, and it's very difficult to try and turn around the thinking of people. Some of whom are quite intelligent, some are not so intelligent, but even legal professionals. And when they say, well, we haven't got this, the European Convention has got abrogations, and you say to them, listen, the Bill of Rights has got a supremacy clause, right? Our parliament is supreme over that parliament, but we are the people that elect them, right? Key to this, again, you've mentioned the Crown. The Crown hasn't, in this country, and I mean England. When I talk about this country, I mean England. The British Parliament is a political union.
Right? Like the EU. It's an example of like the EU, isn't it? It's a supranational union above.
Exactly. It's very similar. to the USSR in Nara and its operation, and people have started to see that, right? Mm-hmm. It is a union, a political union. It isn't a country. So the two countries are England and Scotland. Scotland's got its own legal system. England's got its own legal system. Wales is part of the English legal system, but that happened in 1536. So what you've got to understand is, from the perspective of the Crown was limited in their powers of what they could do in 1688. The Glorious Revolution, put together via the Declaration of Reasons, the Declaration of Rights, which again is not the bill itself, but it had 27 heads of terms, and then the Bill of Rights. And there was other elements to that. You had the Parliament Recognition Act, you had the Coronation Oath Act, and various other elements that fitted in there to make the whole thing structured and legal. That is all constitutional law today. So when people say to us, we've got a constitutional monarchy, in name we have. But Parliament has usurped the power of the monarchy, right? Because there's something else that is really crucial to the common law system and our system of governance, and it's called separation of powers.
Mm-hmm.
They should be all equal, and they were at one point, right? So you've got the judiciary, you've got the Crown, and you've got the Parliament. And if the Crown was to try and do something that was completely, let's say, we'll use the old terminology, repugnant.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if the average person in the street was to come out, and by the way, in some of my old law books, it says that you cannot legislate if it causes rebellion, right? That is regarded as repugnant. The people who are consenting to be governed, if they come out of the streets and they are rebelling, then it's bad law.
So, right? So as an example, during the last two and a half years, where the people hit the street because of the repugnant legislation that was created by Parliament, and in that circumstance, that would be regarded as a rebellion against the repugnant laws of the Crown, as it were.
Well, it's funny you should say that, 'cause in front of I've got one of my cards there, so you probably won't be able to see that on the screen.
Yeah.
And on the front, it's got Bill of Rights, the Constitution is the solution. On the back, this is a proper plastic card, and it says, my constitutional statutory rights are not affected by the regulations brought under the Public Health Control of Diseases Act 1984 or the Coronavirus Act 2020 by order of the Bill of Rights 1688-89, right? When anyone said anything to me, I'd just show them it. And then they would come back with all sorts of silliness, and I'd say to them, by you, meaning a police officer, confronting me and telling me that the Bill of Rights doesn't exist, yeah, you're actually committing a tort against me.
Yeah.
Right? So once you start to talk to
them... Because he's denying your rights that are contained within the Bill of Rights. Yeah.
That, exactly that. And when they take the oath, they take the oath to the common law and to the sovereign.
Mm.
So if you're taking an oath to the sovereign, you will not be in contempt of the sovereign or contempt of statute. Well, in the Halsbury's laws of England, those two offences exist. And if that police officer is going, he is operating under the name of the Crown and the Chief Constable, right? Their warrant is from the Crown.
Mm-hmm.
If they then go against your Bill of Rights, which Her Majesty or His Majesty, not my King, by the way, His Majesty turns around and says, you know, this is the oath, I took the oath, I kissed the Bible, this is, you know, statutes, common law and customs, ancient rights, that, you know, that is what I am swearing to uphold, and his police are ignoring it, they are in contempt of sovereign.
Yeah.
By law.
Mm-hmm. So, right? So if Parliament is claiming sovereignty through usurpation and coup, then that's ultra vires. They don't actually hold that sovereignty. if not them, then who? Where does sovereignty vest? If it's not in Parliament, does it revert back to the British monarchy as it stands now? Or is that almost like sedevacantist? You know, they in the Catholic controversy that they're having at the moment is a sect called sedevacantist, which means that the seat of St. Peter is empty, that they don't see the Pope as legitimate or having the authority of the seat. So where does it go? Where does sovereignty go if not in Parliament?
You've made a really good point there because and it is a really good point and a point that a lot of people don't understand, and it is so simple. Mm. The sovereignty relies on us as the people.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
it flows so from the people, doesn't it, to the sovereign. We consent for to be ruled.
it has to. And not only that, the monarch, if you actually go and look at the coronation, the monarch is elected.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because the archbishop turns to the west, the east, the north and the south and asks, do you, the subjects of England, the realm of England, consent to X being your monarch?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, I do. If they say, I don't, the person doesn't become the monarch. Mm. And that dates back to our customs and ancient customs, right, of Anglo-Saxon times.
That's right.
Where we elected our kings.
That's right. For life. So it was a lifetime position, wasn't it? But it was elected and not hereditary, which the nobility who were there to represent the people would elect the king for life, which for me is the best system, I think.
So again, getting back to the common law, it's fairly obvious when you understand constitutional law that the common law can offer you two options. It can offer you a constitutional monarch, or it can offer you a constitutional republic.
Hmm.
So the republic means that you've got to realise that the executive can either be the crown or an elected president, right? The power of the president is the same as the monarch, which is why presidents in the US have the prerogative of mercy. The power of the president has various, so they're the ones who can declare war. The president of the United States can declare war on other nations. Congress is only, they're only allowed to operate short term in conflict situations before it has to go to Congress. So people need to understand the common law will offer you both. So America is a common law system. It has a Supreme Court. We have a Supreme Court, but we have one for a different reason, that our constitutional law was usurped by Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the law lords out of the House of Lords and put them into a separate area. There's a big issue at the moment. Anyone watching this show may or may not know this. There's a big issue going on in Israel at the moment, right now. In Israel, literally people taking to the streets because the Prime Minister of Israel has basically said, we are taking away certain powers from the judiciary. And Joe Biden has literally been on the phone to the Prime Minister of Israel. Is it Benjamin
Netanyahu?
Now, for them two to be having a conversation about this situation, there's obviously a serious problem, mm-hmm. right? But most people have not even seen this on the news. And one of the reasons why you haven't is people in this country will say that they've done this, they've done that in this country. What was the Constitutional Reform Act of 2005? Well, they usurped the powers. Right. So getting back to 1849, no monarch in this country has ever signed a law dissented. So they've never assented or dissented from a law. Right. But why is it that when the monarchs went to New Zealand, Australia and Canada, they did do that? they signed laws in. And that is because this parliament usurped the monarch's powers in this in this union.
But in the Commonwealth, they haven't. So in the Commonwealth, them old laws still apply.
Exactly. And people don't realise what they've done, which is what we're trying to get over to people. So going back as well. So, again, what happens if you haven't got a crown? Well, at a stage in our history, we didn't have a crown. Cromwell, you know, we didn't have a crown. There was a civil war, and there was something. So people, if you go and have a look at, it was actually called, and they put this into place, the instrument of government, and it was in effect the first codified, and this was actually codified, and written constitution of England, right? But if you actually look at that law, the bit that's quite strange that people don't understand was even under a republic, in other words, a protectorate, right, Cromwell, at 38, Article 38 of the instrument of government, which stated that all laws and statutes and ordinances and clauses in any law, statute or ordinance to the contrary of the aforesaid liberty shall be esteemed as null and void. All right? So getting back to the common law, controlling statute. Right? They've put it and written it down and said that's, you can't do this. You can't go against it. The Bill of Rights have said the same thing. But if you go back to the common law, a number of our previous judges, including Sir Edward Coke, basically said, and this again, this is paraphrasing, that any law that is against right and reason or repugnant is no law at all, and it is null and void. And any law that goes against the Magna Carta is null and void. And people often say to me, there is no Magna Carta anymore, right? Yes, there is. It was created in 1215. It wasn't signed. It was sealed. And that law still exists. And they say, yeah, but Parliament repealed it.
But that's a problem, isn't it? Magna Carta is a problem for the British Union because that's where our rights are enshrined from the beginning. So, of course, they're going to say that it doesn't stand anymore. Of course, they're going to say and dismiss it as much as they can because that's a real problem to their usurpation of the English crown.
It is, and there's other issues with it as well. Through artificial intelligence, you can now go and get a download anywhere of the Latin Magna Carta, exactly how it was written in Latin, right? Without relying on any interpretation from the British or anyone else for that matter, you can load it into an AI and it will, because AI is a language system, yeah? It will translate it with no bias, right? And you want to see what it says.
Yeah, I'll be putting it through ChatGPT later.
And the thing is, there's a number of elements in there, and you get these academics that then start to argue about whether a certain Latin word means and or. When in everything, they have said this particular word, and I can't remember what it is at the moment. I don't actually speak Latin, but I've concentrated on this because it is important. In law, and or is important, right? So for obvious reasons, because if you have a sentence and the limit of sentence says this, X and Y, it means X and Y must be true or X and Y must be false for it to be give you something in law, right? But if it says or, yeah, and it says Y or A, then you understand that it can be either. And in law, the way you read the law and the way it's constructed is very important. That's why people are trained how to read law. So in the Magna Carta, there are certain elements, and one of the things it refers to is the law of the land, right? So the law of the land is the oath system, That's what the law of the land is.
Mm.
So it says by such and such a law or the law of the land, right? Academics say it's, no, it means and, right? So it says the law of the land is this, basically. And they say, no, in Latin, there is a change and that word means this. So it means basically our ancient laws and our oath system. Our oath system was really important. And it's
really
still is
important. I just done. Yeah. I had a conversation yesterday about the oath system, and you know, the oath system creates the high trust society that we want to live in, the peaceful high trust society, because that's the foundation of us as the subjects or citizens, whatever terms is correct for you. But that's the foundation of us being able to transfer our sovereignty and to have trust in people who take public office, which should be a noble calling, shouldn't it? If you to take noble to take public office, that's a noble calling. It should be the greatest honor in your family. And then when you take that oath, you know, you're pledging your solemn word that you will uphold the laws, customs, and traditions of England, right? And, you know, that's the relationship upon which that trust is founded. But now there's no accountability whatsoever for these people in public office breaching their oaths and acting in disrepute of you know, the high esteem that they should be held in.
So I'll give you an example of that. And there's a number of examples. I've got on the Daddy Dragon website, daddydragon.co.uk, there's actually a pamphlet on there that describes in detail the oath system, and it's a really cool, interesting read, right?
Yeah.
And it was compiled by academics with a lot of history. And so there's a couple of things there about the oath system. One is there was something called perjuring your oath. And it isn't the same as perjury when you give evidence.
Mm.
Perjuring your oath was on par with treason.
Wow.
And they would hang you for it.
Wow.
Right? Perjuring your oath was your word and your bond was so important. If you give your word, it was like giving your word to God. You could not go against it. And that's why they used the oath system, and you would have oath takers come in, and you could be accused of a crime. But the oaths meant so much to them that you could get six of your village that would stand here in front of a judge, and it could be a capital offence where they're going to hang the person, right, or worse, and they would say, we've known him. That isn't his character. That's not, he has not done this.
Well, that's what jury of your peers doesn't just mean your other citizen. Jury of your peers meant your community, the people who knew you inside out, which meant that the threshold of evidence was higher, because if you could convince those people who knew your entire life, then, you know, that would be a sure sign of guilt, but not these complete random strangers who have no idea who you are or what you're about.
That is definitely part of what the jury system was all about, all right? And the jury system also was a way of nullifying bad law, right? Some people out there at the moment are saying that the jury system is our democracy, not the elected people. That's a nice way of saying things, but you've got to look at the reality. And the reality is, the way that the juries, you've already hit on it, the way that the juries are picked, they can be very politically picked. Totally. I'll guarantee you, if I was to go up for certain crimes at Southwark Court in southeast London, I would get a guilty. If I was to go to the East London Court, right? I think it's called Snaresbrook. I'd get a not guilty.
Yeah.
For the same evidence, different juries with a different mindset of who and what you are, right? Mm. And it's probably the same in Liverpool. You could go to one area, and if you was anything to do with, let's say you was not a state conformist, you know, you didn't have bright pink hair with earrings coming out of every orifice.
They'd crucify me. They were, as part of Liverpool, that would absolutely crucify me. Yeah.
Exactly that. I mean, it's one of the reasons.
But when isn't there that an abuse of the system? Isn't that a breakdown of our system? Yeah.
Right. So again, the reason I'm saying this is because there's a certain group of people talking about this jury system and saying, you know, this is the democracy, this is what it is. They haven't, in reality, got a clue.
No.
They're not from the street. They don't understand that the system's corrupt. I mean, I know, literally, solicitors in the past that have paid clerks of the court to put their clients in front of certain judges, right? The jury pool can be taken from a certain area for that particular trial. Do you understand? They can construct whatever they need to construct. And people believe that's how crooked this system has become. It's unfair and it's not right, but that's the way the system is. And the only way you can take it back is if you actually take it back root and branch and start again. Yeah. So, but getting back to the main subject area, people need to understand that Parliament is not sovereign. The Constitution is sovereign. We, or our ancestors, created the Constitution. We, the people. And,
so that means we're sovereign, doesn't it? The people are sovereign in that case.
We are sovereign.
Yeah.
So if you look at, what's the easiest way of explaining this? If you look at this situation, and it's a simple situation, right? If Parliament said there's going to be an election tomorrow, they send out a writ, right? They go through this rigmarole, right, and send out a writ. Then Parliament is prorogued. Parliament, that's it, it's finished. There is no Parliament, right, for that period. What happens then is the Crown is responsible for the country with the executive, which is basically ministers, right? The executive and the Crown, right? But who picks the Parliament? Who picks the next Parliament? Who picks the next government? It isn't the Crown. It's us, right? Even though it's manipulated at the moment, wrongly, and the way it's operating, it's actually, I would describe our system today as an elected dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because they are contravening our constitutional rights day in, day out. But the Crown, there's two ways of looking at this. Either the Crown has been usurped, which is the way I look at it. Some other people say, no, the Crown has usurped Parliament, right? I don't care which one it is. I know that whatever one it is, we're the ones who are paying the price for it.
Totally.
So what we've got to do is take our constitutional laws back more than anything else. And they're there. They can't erase them.
But I think it's an important point because the laws that we have are so deeply ingrained, right? And they're so protective of the people of England, right? That for an example, they're not easy to change, right? So look at Tony Blair, for instance. Tony Blair, from the moment he took office as Prime Minister, has been trying to implement and impose an ID system upon the population, right? When he was Prime Minister, he tried his hardest to get us to all have ID cards, but it failed because the law is so protective of the people in England that he just couldn't do it. And now, you know, in his new role as ambassador for World Economic Forum, you can listen to him speak in the World Economic Forum, and he's trying to bring in a digital ID. So this is phase two of Tony Blair's attempts to impose this, this tyrannical imposition upon the people. And it's obviously that's one of the charges that he's been given when he was told that he was going to have power. We want you to impose an ID system on the people. But the English law is so strong and so powerful that it's resistant to these attempts of tyrannical rule. But you know what's happening now in England, isn't it, is that if they can't change the law, they'll change the people. And we seem to be seeing more and more people being brought in that don't have a clue about English law, English rights, and it's easier to do when people are ignorant of what their, you know, true rights and you know, freedoms are. What's your take on that, on Blair and his attempt to do, you know, usurp the law?
I agree. There's a group of people called the Fabian Society that is British. There's the International Fabian Society. Every nefarious group of people in every one of the countries, including the United States of America, has got something to do with the Fabian Society. Tony Blair was an executive member. Sadiq Khan is an executive member. Keir Starmer is an executive member. Every prime minister, Labour prime minister bar one, was a Fabian. Every one of Tony Blair's cabinet bar one was a Fabian Society member. They are committed Marxists, and people need to understand what they've done. But here's the clue, people. Guess who else are also Fabians? Tories.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they're all in together.
And the civil servants. So Kenneth Clark was a Fabian. Lord Hurd was a Fabian. Oliver
Lexley. But it seems Fabians want to, you know, destroy the fabric of England. Fabian was a Roman Caesar, wasn't he? After all, he wasn't an English hero. He wasn't an English king. He was a Roman Caesar. And Roman civil law is probably something that's trying to be used to usurp the English common law.
So what the fight? So the reason why they called it the Fabian Society and Fabian was because there was a really fight. Like, he was the famous Roman general. And he basically starved out a city. Mm. He waited the time, and bit by bit, he waited, and then the city collapsed. That's what Fabianism really is. So there's a difference between Marxism and communism. Communism generally is full-on violent revolution. Marxism is bit by bit, and you don't realise. You're the frog that's been put in cold water, and they just slowly turn it up.
Yeah.
And you know, that's whereas the other way is communism, where they just throw you in the hot water and you're going to bounce out, basically. Right? So that's the basis of Fabians. But the UN, the first UN president of the United Nations was an Australian Fabian, a member of Parliament in Australia. There's many Fabians in America, and it's all been pushed from the British end. But getting back to something you just said about digital ID, and people can go and research this. So there's something called DN5, right? So if you put in Digital Nations 5 on any Google system, it will go back and it will bring up the government, the British government, and it will say Digital Nations 5, and it will give you the history of Digital Nations. In 2014, they created digital governance. And part of that system of digital governance is central bank digital currency, digital identification, digital passes, digital government. So even now, if you was to apply for a new driving license, right? It's all digitized.
Mm.
Your image is digitized. The driving license is digitized. Your signature is digitized. If you go on your passport, your face is digitized. When you go to a passport and it scans your face and it lets you through the barrier, all right? So DN5 and the five original nations, and who was the core original nation? Where was the first convention and conference on Digital Nations 5? London, right? It's expanded and expanded and expanded. I think it's up to something like Digital 14 now, right? Which means that all these nations, so when people just talk about the WEF, it's all to do with this system as well. And people, if this has been a continuous plan, but people are not seeing it. They're not, they don't come out and say, oh, by the way, we're going to do this because we want to take all your rights and we want complete control over you. But that's exactly what they've done.
Totally, yeah.
So at the end of the day, what we're about, so I'll give you another example. We as a political party have come up with a digital bill of rights, which is on our website. And it basically protects you against AI. It protects you against any digital infringement of you, right? So let me just say this to you. You are a creation in God's image, right? It's your copyright. Mm-hmm. It's between you and God, not to do with his government, right? So your face is covered by the digital bill of rights. Your retinas are, right? Your gait is, how you walk. Your fingerprints are. Your DNA is. Everything about you, every biometric measurement there is about that is protected, including your voice print, under this digital bill of rights.
Mm.
We sent it as a petition to Parliament, right? Anyone can go and read this. It's on the website. And Parliament come back and said, we're not sure what you're asking for. Right? And part of that was, one, digital surveillance, and the other side of it was no to central bank digital currency, which, again, is programmable. So if they turn around to you tomorrow and say, you've been a naughty boy this week, so you can't go and put petrol in your car and you can't travel anywhere. So if you went out and tried, because there'd be no cash, to get a bus from A to B, it'll come up and say, you can't. Mm. It'd scan your face and the bus door wouldn't.
Our total enslavement is a follow-on, isn't it, from the CBDC. Definitely something we must oppose with all of our might, because once that's in, is like you say, they can tax you or fine you at source. Or they can do anything. So just before we wrap this up, just when the English Constitution Party is elected into office, how would you reorganise Parliament so that Parliament no longer claims sovereignty? And who would you have, a monarchy? If so, how would you elect the monarch? Where would you, find the monarch from? What would be the way that you would reform the current situation that we have now?
All right, so first of all, I'm glad you used the word reform and not me. You cannot reform the British, right? You can't reform and you can't. By the way, the civil service is absolutely riddled with Fabians, right? You can go and research that. Jeremy Hayward recently died, was a senior Fabian, and he was the cabinet secretary, the most senior civil servant, a Marxist, right? So let's get back to that original. What would we do? So the antithesis of a totalitarian state or a complete state control is decentralization. England was decentralized, not in regions, counties, in districts and parishes, where you hand accountability back to the people, right? So all of that is still in place. They know this, by the way, and that's why they absolutely hate us speaking about it, right? You would then create an English Parliament, so you would void the Acts of Union. And the reason you would do that is because the British Parliament, the British Union Parliament, is in bad faith, right? So in law, you've breached the treaty. The treaty is now defunct. We're avoiding it. Scotland could do this tomorrow if they wanted to, right? And all we're going to do is going to say, that's it, end of the union. An English Parliament, preferably out of London. So it would be either in York or it would be in Hull. I mean, for argument's sake, it could be in Liverpool, right? It could be anywhere in England, right? So there's the Parliament. It would obviously be modern and up-to-date, etc., but it's still got to have some of the processes that are non-digital. Whatever happens, the actual power resides with Essex and Lancashire and Cornwall and Kent. They create their laws.
Could they be sovereign? Each county would be sovereign in itself. Yeah.
Exactly the same as America is now, where each state.
Well, America copied us, didn't they? they copied our system. Yeah.
So And but there were some advancements. So, for example, they had the Electoral College, which is a good. That's why the Democrats or the statists in America want to cancel it. Because it is keeping them and the statist system, the communist system, out of control. So we need that here, right? So what you would do is you create that parliament. The English parliament is there for national national issues, right? Where you elect a member of parliament from your constituency, no different. But really, the real power is held by the county. It can be overridden. So, again, you would have county courts would take back their proper positions, like the state courts in America, right? And you would also have, in effect, if you want to call it a Supreme Court in the in each individual county. And if it's still an issue, it then comes back to the English Parliament and the English House of Lords, where they decide whether or not it's a constitutional issue. So, in effect, it's similar to a federal, but it doesn't involve Scotland. Wales would be given a choice whoever wants to be part of it. Northern Ireland would become the very... certainly, we don't believe that Northern Ireland should be abandoned. We believe that Northern Ireland should be the same and operate in a very same way as the Isle of Man. Because the Isle of Man... Well, the Isle of Man was never in the European Union. A lot of people don't know that. And they go, really?
Wow.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So once you can do that, how long does it take from our project management view of this? 18 months, everything would be up and running properly. Again, you could also have something called Treasury money, where the English Treasury would issue money for construction, national construction, infrastructure type projects, right? All it means, the money has to come back, but there's no interest, right? So that's one thing that central banks hate about what we're talking about. Each county would have its own bank again. So you would have the Lancashire Bank, you would have the Yorkshire Bank, the Bank of Rochester, the Bank of in Kent, you would have all of this old system would come back, and each county would control itself as a sovereign nation. And within that, but you get the maximum amount of accountability with the people being governed in their own areas. And if Kent made a law that was abhorrent, but it was still lawful. It wasn't unconstitutional, but you didn't like it. You could move to Essex. And Essex create a system that is so fantastic that everyone would want to move there. The house prices shoot up. It becomes this fantastic place to live. Not that it isn't now, right? But the point is, that's the point of good governance. People want to live there.
Who would be the executive in a decentralized England? Because, you know, for me, when the people ask me about whether I supported Brexit, yeah, of course I supported Brexit because I support decentralization. But I believe that Brexit didn't go far enough. It needs to keep decentralizing. It needs to, you know, we've defeated the EU, next we need to defeat the next level of the union and keep going back further and further. So, again, it didn't go anywhere near far enough, in my view. But in a decentralized, autonomous, sovereign structure, which is the, you know, the birthright of England, isn't it? And the birthright of Englishmen who were born in England is, I think it's a fantastic system, and it's definitely something that we should be advocating for. How does the executive... who is the executive? Is it would the Prime Minister remain as the executive within a decentralized structure, or would it be a president for life under a republic, or would it be a monarch? What would be the way forward in that scenario?
Right. So you're touching on a subject that's really, it's an important subject, but I'm So I can, well, let me put it this way. I can only give my personal view.
Yeah.
I can't give the Constitution Party view because we haven't had a structured policy. If yes, what do we are going to do?
Okay, so you haven't figured that out yet. It's still theorising and debating.
It's easy. You don't have to figure anything out. Whichever way you want to go, the common law can resolve it, right? Yeah. It's easy. It's not about figuring it out. It's about people understanding. So I'll give you my personal view. It's the easiest way to do it, right? In my view, the monarchy has been usurped and they are just puppets sitting there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe the whole monarchy system should be taken down and we have a presidential system exactly the same as America with some tweaks to it, because we've now seen 240-plus years of that system, of that experiment, working well, right? Until recent years, and that's the corruption of the British, not America as itself, right? That's about British foreign policy playing in there. They've basically hijacked the country, right? So what I would say is we would have that system with some tweaks, and it's the tweaks that we'd work on. And so you would have still the executive would be a president. But if we was to carry, you don't have to have that straight away. Mm-hmm. You can take back your country, go back to a decentralized system, all of them things, and you would then have a monarchy. Let's say Charles reneged on being the monarch, right? Or everyone said, listen, we're not too happy about your brother being a nonce, and we're not too happy that your best mate was Jimmy Savile, right? And you're trying to tell us that everyone and anyone didn't know, yet he had full access.
Yeah.
So you can have it either way. Let me explain something else, because it's far simpler to put it like this. Who do I trust in Scotland? And the answer is Alex Salmond.
Yeah.
Why? Right? Is because, believe it or not, he said, I want to come out of the union, but I also want out of the monarchy. Anyone who says them two things, you know that they're serious. Mm. You know they want an independent country. The fact that they're saying they want to go back into the European Union, it's none of my business. If that's what they say they want, right?
Yeah.
All we would do is build a big wall right across the border, put passport control in, and if they start shipping in lots of immigrants from Europe to bring them over to us, and by the way, they're already purchasing some very large ferries that they intend to run from Fatayf to Zeebrugge, right? And again, them from Turkey. So, I mean, if that happens, the problems you're seeing on the English Channel is going to be nothing compared to that.
It'll be dwarfed, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So there are elements we need to look at. Not a major issue.
No, I like that. I think it's a really good idea. I think the only question I think to be had from that is that, because, you know, if like King Harold, yeah, he was the last elected, if you like, King of England, as far as I can work out, is that he was elected in the Witten, right? And, he was elected for life. So in a sense, it's like a president's role, isn't it? Is that... It's not hereditary in that sense, but there's still one leader, there's a monarch, right? But it's an elected office and they serve for life. So there is no, when you listen to the libertarians and stuff and they talk about this idea of time preference, is that when you have an elected leader for life, is that it makes corruption less likely, because when you have them in for a certain term, they're thinking, okay, well, what can I rinse out of this office while I'm in? I've only got 4 years. Let me see what I can grab, because I've got to go back to some level of obscurity again. Whereas when it's for life, they don't have those same temptations, because they're in it for the long term and they're in it to make sure the country as a whole is improved. So I think I like the idea of an elected president, but could be an elected king. It's just depending on the way you describe it. I think the next thing to figure out is the term length, because in America, before they made the constitutional amendments, is that the president could be in for life as long as he kept winning elections. But they changed that, didn't they? Said there was only an 8-year term. Yeah.
So there's good points and bad points about what you're talking about there. So in both systems, whether it's a monarchy or the executive being a president,
mm-hmm.
you need a way of impeaching if there is corruption in any way, right? So America's got something called impeachment. We've got our in under the monarchy, we've got Article 61. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the enforcement of that, because the separation of powers is now broken. Whereas a judiciary should have stepped in a long time ago and said, actually, you're acting unconstitutionally. This is wrong. Like, so I'll give you an example. Prince Charles and the Constitutional Unit of Imperial College London, I believe it is, have now rewritten part of the oath, right? The coronation oath. That's illegal.
Yeah, how can they do that?
It needs to be challenged, but then because the judges are using the Constitution as a protection measure, so you can't back them, right? But then on the other hand, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. The judges are really important. Again, I think I've said this to you. Back in the old days, I mean, literally time immemorial time, if you as a judge and give a bad judgment and it was obvious it was a bad judgment and you were deliberately corrupt, right? And I'm not suggesting we do this.
Yeah.
The people would cut your tongue out.
Yeah. Because you can't trust them. And we're giving them that much power in that position where, you know, it's that if you can't trust them, then the whole system collapses under that breach of oath, doesn't it? And therefore it should be punished as harshly as the law allows.
Right. So the second thing is, and again, a lot of people don't, under the ancient system, judges were the only people that didn't have to carry arms. Yeah. And the reason for that was because we protected them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So we had a special affection for a judge as a good person. And one of them people that was a really, really fantastic judge, and there's been lots of chief justices who were fantastic common law judges, and one of them was Sir Edward Coke. Again, people need to understand that our laws and our ancient system is there, our constitution is there, but this government and previous governments and the Marxist system has usurped our knowledge of that system. And the Acts of Union actually states that these rights and privileges must be communicated to the people.
Cool. Okay, I'm going to have to wrap it up there. Before I do, let us know quickly about what's happening right now on the ground with the English Constitution Party. You've got any elections coming up? What's the latest from the front lines?
Right, well, so we did have a couple of candidates in Romford who'd done very well, and we did this. We actually dislodged two Tory candidates in the local elections in Romford. We have got three target areas in England for members of the Parliament, which I won't go into yet, but we're looking at that, and we're already working in them areas. And we've got people standing in local elections in Yorkshire. Hopefully, as long as they do all the paperwork and it comes through, we shouldn't have a problem. The membership is rising quite rapidly. Again, I've been banned on YouTube. I mean, at one stage I had 100,000 subscribers. I then started another channel, 25,000 subscribers, then another channel, 2,500 subscribers, and they've all basically been taken down with strikes and completely gone, etc. Years worth of
work. I'm on two strikes at the moment, so they're saying that if I get another one within 90 days, my channel's gone, so I've got to really, I can't upload at the moment or anything yet. I did an interview with Dr. David Cartland, and he took me down, and it's the second one, so yeah. We've got to find other platforms, haven't we, because YouTube, even though it's probably the only game in town, you know, it's difficult building any momentum on Rumble, isn't it? And Odyssey, you know, so we've got to find a way through that.
Yeah, so I'm on Rumble. The viewing figures on Rumble are going up. One of mine, I believe, has had over 100,000 views.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm at nearly 5,000 subscribers.
Very good.
Bearing in mind that people in this country at the moment are not being told that, you know, Rumble exists as this platform. One, it's a good platform. It's got a great, there's a great system in place behind it. And just to let you know, Twitter has now changed quite a bit. So I'm on Twitter again. Mm. Also, we've got our own website, which is the EnglishConstitutionParty.com. And again, the membership's increasing. Everything's going really well, to be honest.
Fantastic. Great. It's great to see that, you know, you build momentum, and the momentum is building since the last time we spoke. And I hope the next time we speak after this podcast, it's the momentum's going even faster. So it's Graham Moore on Twitter, on Rumble. You got your own personal blog and also the English Constitution Party. I'll put them all in the description below. Any final words that you want to say to our audience, Graham, before we call it a day?
The only thing I'll say to the audience is, don't forget what I believe in, and that's the Constitution is the solution.
Fantastic. Graham Moore, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.